This is the Counter-Ruck, your Six Nations rugby podcast brought to you by the Irish Times in association with Nifty Business. My name is Nathan Johns and I'm joined in studio today by former Ireland international and current Irish Times columnist Gordon Darcy and Irish Times rugby writer John O'Sullivan. We're roughly about 48 hours out from the final match of Ireland's Six Nations campaign. They take on Scotland this weekend on Saturday in the Aviva Stadium at 4:45. Victory would secure a Six Nations title, even if the Grand Slam dream has gone. That said, Scotland, as they come to Dublin, haven't won on Irish soil since 2010. And it just so happens that the man sitting to my left was involved that day. How are you, Gordon?
Great way to start things, isn't it?
Let's go through all your trauma.
I did some good things as well.
No one remembers the good.
No one remembers the good.
I was going to say, we'll be the judge of that.
I just remember, I think we had, was it 23-20, I think. And I remember at halftime, kind of being in the change room, it was like really weird. Like we should have maybe, I think, probably had, should have had three tries or something before halftime. Like the game should have been home and hosed. And then for some reason we weren't. And it was like 17-all then quite quick after halftime. And then we ended up losing. And like, I remember Dan Parks in the bar afterwards. And he was just, he literally couldn't believe his luck. Pretty much everything he touched turned to gold on that day. He was pinging balls for the corner. He was sitting so far back in the pocket, he couldn't have got him. He was so far in the pocket, and he was just picking these ridiculous kicks for the corner. Every pop he had at goal just went perfect, and you were kind of like at the end of going, how did we actually lose that?
Yeah, Dan Parks, of course, the Scottish out half who more or less single-handedly kicked Scotland to victory that day. That was our last victory in Dublin. Scotland haven't won in this fixture since 2017. That game was at Murrayfield. It's, 7 years on, 2 World Cups, lots of Six Nations matches in between. John, and I think by the way, we were talking about this before we recorded, and you know, there seems to be quite a bit of animosity between the two sides, but I don't think you can call it a rivalry purely because Ireland have been so dominant in this fixture.
Yeah, I think it's more to do with Glasgow and the Irish province has been pretty feisty in URC games when they've played against each other, if you like. I think for Scotland, they would claim that they haven't talked themselves up, that other people have talked them up in terms of the rivalry. But yeah, if you look at the facts of it and you examine those, yeah, 2 wins in 14 years isn't exactly a kind of closely fought rivalry. I think there were a couple of games that are tight, but in a lot of games, Scotland came with a following breeze and kind of left very deflated, if you want to describe it as that, in terms of their performance. They've been flat in a number of games. They've had opportunities in other games as well, but they haven't been able to translate form in other matches into a winning performance against Ireland.
It's really interesting because rugby as a sport doesn't do the kind of the bravado of other sports. They don't have the public kind of pronouncements of, we don't like this guy, we don't like this team, we don't have the same rivalries that you might have in a football.
Well, Ryan Wilson has said plenty.
But, there's always a but. Ryan Wilson, former Glasgow he's not still playing for Glasgow, is he? No, former Glasgow and Scotland international has said plenty. Like you said, Peter O'Mahony has said plenty. He came out after Ireland beat them in the World Cup, didn't he? And he kind of said Scotland were doing a lot of talking before the game, and he was happy enough to quieten that down. O'Mahony also famously put his fingers to his lips and told Finn Russell to shush during that game at some point after Ireland scored. Viewers of the recent Netflix documentary will remember that when the Ireland-Scotland game from last year's Six Nations was documented, Scotland's coach, Gregor Townsend, was in the change room kind of saying, these guys don't think you're any good, their media doesn't think you're any good, which I thought was bizarre that he's referencing an opposition media in a changing room. There's a psychological thing going on there. I don't know how to describe it, but it's one of those rare games where you can clearly see both teams really don't like each other for whatever reason.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure it's both teams don't like each other. I mean, the other one that was, I think it was the Johnny Sexton trip, which ended up with Dan Sheehan and Pierre Schumann going over the hoarding, pushing each other over the hoarding, and Michael Carney separating Dan, or pulling Dan back away from...
This is in Paris as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, so, I mean, there have been incidents in matches. Yeah, I thought Gregor Townsend's kind of citing the Irish media as kind of, you know, and as if they have attaching a weight to their opinion, if you like, I thought was quite strange as well.
But it's also to show a team that has only won twice in an extended period in 14 years. So you're kind of throwing any bit of motivation you can at it.
But that sounds, and I think the point you're making there is that it's pangs of desperation. I mean, you're the one who was sitting in those changing rooms getting those motivations, be it from external sources or not. But I'm looking at that going, if I'm a player in that situation, and I'm clinging on to the idea that the media from the other country who has beaten us end over end, game after game, that's the motivation we're getting to go out here. Like, I don't know. If you're a player sitting there, you're not impressed, are
you? Yeah, I think there's probably two different things in this. There is Scotland's own issues that they have, which were firmly laid bare in the loss to Italy. You know, blowing hot and cold, which has been probably Gregor Townsend's biggest challenge with Scotland as his tenure as head coach, is trying to deliver a level of consistency that they just have never been able to achieve. So you have that, and then you can overlay that with Ireland being relatively dominant in the last 15 years. So the two things kind of collide, and I don't think it's necessarily all directed at Ireland. It's probably a bit of internal frustration from them. You know, and last week, perfect example of that going, they wanted that as a springboard into this game to be challenging Ireland as peers. Whereas now they've kind of, you know, tripped themselves up and have got one hand tied behind the back mentally coming into this game, because they've just, you know, they've undone all the good work of the English game. And everybody we're always waiting with Scotland to figure out which team is going to show up every week. And that's the, I think there's a bit of frustration with that, with them, that boils out into other avenues maybe.
Well, let's get into the shortcomings of that match. Obviously, Scotland did lose to Italy in Rome last weekend. John, what did you take from that? I mean, the most obvious place to start, at least from my reading of the game, is Italy scored two tries from kicking in behind. Like, their backfield defence looks like it can be disorganised at the best of times and cough up opportunities. And it's not a one-off. They've conceded quite a few kick tries, including against Ireland at that last World Cup. France got one as well during the recent Six Nations. If you work the space, they more so than other teams, it seems like, do give you opportunities in behind.
Yeah, I think there's a concentration issue definitely there. And it comes in both attack and defence. They played some great rugby, and they do play some great rugby, and they have some great attacking threats. And you look at Duhan van der Merwe and all he's achieved. But there are times when they seem to switch off, or they go into individual mode. And as a team, when you go into individual mode, you run the risk of making poor decisions. And you can see that with them shooting out of the line. You can see that with a lack of communication at times in who's doing what, if you like, in the defensive line. And then, as you've alluded to already or pointed out, not having a sweeper, not having somebody in behind. And that's good play from Italy. And it's obviously something it's a legacy issue for Scotland, because it wasn't just a case of Paolo Garbisi in one case spotting the gap in behind. It was obviously something that the video analysis has brought up. And the fact that you're writing a piece on Saturday and we're going to look at it from that perspective, that this is a recurring issue for them. So in those circumstances, you would say that Scotland's, I would say, concentration issues within a game, and they're still offering the same fault lines from match to match, which is a worry for Gregor Townsend and his coaching group.
Darce, on that, the kind of, when you do, fool me once, shame on you, isn't it? Fool me twice, shame on me. So, you know, where they've been fooled more than twice with kicks in behind. John mentioned the kind of the issue of the third defence in midfield kind of shooting out of the line and not doing anything, and therefore there's a disconnected line and teams can score. England and France have done it to them in the Six Nations. Ireland did it to them twice at the last World Cup. When you've got these things that are clear issues, clear things that come up over and over again, at what point do you look at the players and at what point do you look at the coaching staff?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say they're probably both equally to blame. You know, when things don't go right, you're obviously deploying a defensive system. It's working some of the time and other times it's not. And you look at, say, what England are doing with that high press. When it works, you know, the players, they've got a good read and they've built that. They've built the foundations to go up high past the ball. It works really well for them. For Scotland, I'm not sure why they are doing it. They're having that kind of floating 13 coming up, trying to maybe get into eye lines. And when it works okay. But I think the problem they have is the individuals don't have that good understanding, a decent understanding of when the opportunity isn't there to do it, or when, you know, they're on the back foot. Maybe I shouldn't be going up and just hovering in between. In between attackers and just creating a dog leg, and possibly something that maybe ties all that in, because obviously Scotland come under a bit of pressure from their own media and ex players this week, and there is guys, former Sevens captain Colin Gregor, and he's talking about that when pressure comes on, Scotland tend to default to individuality. And I thought that was a really good observation in it. And you kind of wonder what is the bit that, because when they are in flow, they're so impressive. But I think they're so badly one-sided in attack that when they actually have to defend for long periods of time, they actually, like John's saying, their concentration levels aren't necessarily there as often as they should do. Looking at Scotland over the last couple of years, is that, you know, that kind of little on-field leadership and that responsibility, individual responsibility, doesn't seem to be there. And, you know, they've gone all in with Finn Russell as their captain. And body language-wise, you know, I only saw highlights of the game, but body language-wise, when your captain is walking around, shouting at the referee, slapping his hands, you know, giving it the... you know, throwing his hands up in the air, that sends out more messages than anything else for me. And like, if that's, rather than knuckling down, trying to find a way to win, you're giving out about the circumstances that are going on. And that's not great. In a team environment, you can sometimes have, you know, that mercurial player, you know, out in a wing or something like that, or a back row forward or something like that. You just tolerate with that. But when it's your captain doing it, it sets a really bad example and a bad precedent.
At the risk of being name-checked by Gregor Townsend in next year's Netflix documentary when he says this media doesn't rate you, John. Scotland, you know, we're talking about their defensive frailties. They got quite a good midfield attack, quite a lot of strike runners. You mentioned people like Mandy Murphy there. What can we expect from the Scottish side, maybe ball in hand, which seems to be more of their strength?
Well, I don't think you're ever going to neuter, if you like, Finn Russell. Finn Russell's instincts are his instincts, and he'll continue playing the way he does until he stops playing, basically. So I would expect him, if his pack can give him good quick ball, then he certainly won't die wondering in terms of his distribution, his kicking game, be that in behind, cross kicking, his ability to spot 50-22s. He'll bring his players into play, if you like. They use Kyle Steyn off his wing, off the blind side wing as well. So I'd expect Scotland to be... I suppose, eye-catching in the way that they attack. And there are some issues for, like, if you look at Ireland in the England match, Ireland were quite poor defensively in that game. They gave up a lot of space and time to England, and they were punished for it. And there was a lack of organisation in their own defence, you know, that they'll need to. And I would expect them to address ahead of the game on Saturday.
Yeah, they struggled with their defensive width, yeah. I think, was the bit that was quite stark for me, Ireland. That England just seemed to get outside them too easily. And even off the last line out when Ireland had an extra man, yeah, they got outside us very, very quickly and very easily. I would say Scotland will take an awful lot of heart from that. I wonder how much Tupilotto's, me and names, obviously his car crash as always. How big of a loss is he? Because their attack didn't look as good against Italy, and I kind of he's such a good ball player, you know, taking the ball to the line, it's decision making at the line. Hugh Jones looks really good when he plays with him. Didn't look as dangerous playing with Redpath last week, so it will be very interesting to see that. You know, Finn Russell can have all the attacking want, but he's missing his old mucker there at 12 that does so much of the straightening and the, you know, the subtle passes for him in that midfield. The one bit I am interested kind of to look at or think about is Ireland's kicking game from last week, do they repeat that type of kicking game with the threat that the Scottish back three have, considering how much they struggled at counterattack against the English?
Well, they can't, can they? I mean, that back three is arguably more dangerous. We all can remember the Duhan van der Merwe try against England at Twickenham last year, where England ran back a kick, didn't chase it, and he runs it in for 50 metres. Ireland cannot get away with another poor kicking strategy.
I don't know if they will change.
I don't think they will change. I think that if you look at the game in the World Cup match, the most recent World Cup match, they organised, the kick chase line was good. The one thing that when we've touched on here already about Twickenham was the kick chase line was poor. There were a few dog legs in it. You know, the speed, the organisation, everything that you want wasn't there. So what Scotland have done is brought in Stafford McDowall at inside centre. Stafford McDowall is a big boy, and the reason he is there is to stop Bundy Aki getting over the gain line, which he did brilliantly against England. He found George Ford off set plays, and he carried him and two other defenders through the gain line and backwards. So Scotland have identified this, and they've made a change again. So this again comes with, they're looking for a little bit more defensive solidity. It goes back to Darcy's point, and I think it's really well made. I mean, if you look at what Tui Bulotu brings to it, he's such a good rugby player. His ability to attack the line, his choice of when to offload, when to play the ball, when to pass, when to carry through traffic is first class. And it allows, you look at a player like that and you understand how much he allows the team to function and to play off him. Hugh Jones, and it goes back, sorry, to a point that we were making a couple of minutes ago. Hugh Jones had a penchant for intercepts. And there's still an element of that to his game. He's like a kitten chasing silver paper. If he sees somebody winding up for a long pass, he's inclined to kind of go forward. So there, if Ireland can kind of draw him into moments like this and making decisions like that, and there's an element of, there's a couple of players in the Scottish defensive line who are a little bit kind of trigger happy, and that's what you want to do. You want to shape and show something, and then you want to change the look at the last minute, and that's what teams have done to Scotland, and I think that's something that Ireland will look to do on Saturday.
I'll continue my chat with Gordon and John after this short break. Welcome back to the Counter Ruck. My name is Nathan Johns, and I'm still here with Gordon Darcy and John O'Sullivan as we talk all things Ireland versus Scotland. Right then, well, let's get on to the Irish team, which was named shortly before we started recording. I mean, we've talked a lot about midfield defence. Hugh Jones is playing at 13, maybe a bit of uncertainty with the new Stafford McDowall in there and that new midfield partnership. I mean, a big part of the reason why Ireland cut them open so much in the World Cup to the extent that they did was the performance of Gary Ringrose. He's obviously an excellent distributor and makes line breaks in that 13 channel. I know he hasn't played, but is there any sort of argument to be made there that when you're playing against a team like Scotland who have those weaknesses, someone like a more, and not to say that Henshaw isn't a ball playing 13, but someone who's just maybe slightly more natural at that, is there an argument to be made there that he could have got a look in to start, albeit he is on the bench?
I don't think so. I think he hasn't played a minute of rugby. When did he get injured? When's the last game he played?
Leicester Tigers for Leinster.
Yeah, so he had like, in a match, in a championship decider, let's not forget about this, like it is a championship decider, despite any of the air being let out of the tire for some people that were not going for a Grand Slam, it's a championship. So I wouldn't have seen that being even like on the discussion. What will be really interesting to see, like Robbie Henshaw has been at every asking has been fantastic in the 13 jersey. So the same opportunities will be there for him. It'll be really interesting to see how he deals with them. And because like I think he's been rejuvenated in that 13 jersey at the moment.
John, unchanged starting 15, back to 5-3 on the bench, five forwards.
So three, disappointing, three isn't it?
Is it? Is it? Yeah. Why?
I'd have loved to see them go ahead with it.
After what happened last week, do you just think they got burned a little bit too much by the injuries to the backs?
Like, we'll never get the actual story. We'll never get the real kind of real reason why. Maybe they just didn't think they didn't got enough of an impact from it. And who knows? I would have liked to see them go ahead, keep going with it.
What do you think?
I'm kind of grateful that they've gone 5-3 because I think from the very start, it's you're backing a group, you're backing two groups of players. So you're backing a group of forwards, five forwards, and you're saying that, you know, the three backs will be useful to Ireland in terms of the way they want to play. I think there's an element of horses for courses as well. So obviously Andy Farrell felt that the balance and the mix that he had on the bench last week was the right one for him for that match. As things transpired, and it's like anything else, when you roll the dice, sometimes you don't get what you're looking for, and Ireland lost their backline resources by the 50th minute. So that was just unfortunate, the way that the game panned out. I would like to see the players, repay the faith that Andy Farrell's had in them. He's given players an opportunity. He's supported them. And now it's up to the players to repay that faith. I think it's very important that Ireland produce, and Darce touched on it early on in the week with his column, and he described it as a statement win. I think that is important. Ireland have to produce a statement performance at least, and that hopefully will be good enough. I wouldn't underestimate Scotland. Scotland are a very capable side. They're actually a good side to watch play rugby. If you're a neutral, you know, they play some great rugby. They have flaws, but so do every team. And as Ireland showed last week, they have their own flaws themselves and can be got after, as England did last week. So there is an element this week where Ireland have to produce a performance. They've got to be tidier. They've got to be better. They've got to be more accurate. They've got to be just better, perhaps, than anything they've done so far in the tournament, with the exception of the French game. Maybe they need to produce a kind of hard-nosed win.
But it does, like, when you look at the team is exactly the same. He's done given Calvin Ash all the time to get back in, and delighted for him that he gets back in. It does look like they're going to try to play rather than try to beat up Scotland. They're just going to keep playing. So maybe that 5-3 split, coming back in, they want to keep that tempo up for the game.
Baird
versus Henderson, because that's the bit I was wondering. So did Frawley not make it, or did they actually go, well, we actually want to keep playing and we want the more defined 10 in that slot?
I suspect, we don't know yet, but I suspect he didn't make it because he got sent back to Leinster pretty early on in the week, didn't he? Kieran Frawley, he hasn't been training with Ireland.
No, he's been back in Leinster. The one thing you also have to say is...
GC lads are really on it, aren't you?
It's a job.
It's like sitting there.
You'd
hiding out in the bushes like the old... you'd have done well for Eddie O'Sullivan back in the day. One of the spies.
Was born 10 years too late.
I think also that you've got to look at... So Harry Byrne's been brought back in, and there is a view that this is an entity in itself, this game, but also that they go touring during the summer. And you are trying to look at things if you pick up injuries, or if somebody picked up an injury, and hopefully they don't, that who are you going to bring in? And Andy Farrell has to clarify in his own mind what the pecking order is there. And to do that, you have to give players opportunity. And he has given several players an opportunity during the Six Nations to this point. Now, Harry may get some game time on Saturday, and that's important for his development as well. It's also important for the players to take opportunities when presented. So you can't, on the one hand, give out that you haven't had enough chances when you are given chances, and you have to, when those chances are presented, you have to take them. So I think that's something with the 5-3 split. And it's also, as we touched on earlier on, for Gary Ringrose, there will be an opportunity at some point on Saturday afternoon. And he has to come on and say, you know what, you've missed me. And here's how you've missed me. And come on and produce a performance. So there's lots of different things.
There's nothing worse than being a player when you're injured and you're looking at somebody else in your position doing really, really well. It's like, oh my goodness, I need to get back as quickly as possible.
Well, that's been the story of the Irish centre pairing for the last 4 or 5 years, hasn't it? Basically, ever since Aki came into the equation. There's always been someone injured, and there's always been somebody playing well. Even back when, I think, 2018 against Wales, I think Chris Farrell was man of the match that day in the 13 shirt, wasn't he? So, I mean, Irish centre pairing, we expect, you know, with McCluskey and the outside looking in as well, it's always been the case.
Yeah, like Mac Hansen will come back after injury. So for Calvin Nash, this is another opportunity. So everybody, there's in a lot of positions, there are people looking over somebody else's shoulder. And that's what you want in a team environment. You would like Ireland actually to have more options in some respects, in some positions, which we've outlined, you know, with players who've been, who haven't had a chance to challenge during the Six Nations, and others who maybe might come through or might be taken down to South Africa. So it's important. There's lots of context to Saturday's match. First and foremost, though, is, and it shouldn't be lost, despite what some people have written and said during the week, it shouldn't be lost. This is a chance to win a Six Nations Championship. And first and foremost.
And it's a bit of redemption as well. Like, I've been that. Like, one of the things you don't get to pick and choose with as a player is, you know, when you win, you're representing your country, right? And there's a you build that up, and you know we win the Grand Slam in 2009 and everything, and it's like, hey, you know, Decky was hamming that up and everything, and you really feel a connection with everybody. When you lose, like, you do feel like you've let your country down. So there's 23 players there and the wider squad. There is a bit in their noodle that is going, we've let the country down. Might not be consciously, but it could be subconsciously in there. It's really important that they draw a line under that. And I think that should be motivation enough going into this weekend, because in the cold light of day, Ireland weren't aggressive enough against England last week. And I think I don't think that's speaking out of school, out of shop. You just body language, you look what Ben Earls was doing, you look at what Chisholm was doing. Where did we didn't get a, you know, Joe McCarthy didn't really have too many moments that we associate with Joe McCarthy. We weren't at that emotional level, I don't think, for that game, which is really good learning for them. But this is an opportunity. You're speaking about opportunities for jerseys and for South Africa. It's an opportunity to right the wrongs of, you know, 7 days ago for a lot of these players. And I think that is really important for this group. It's the last match in the Six Nations. And for some players, like, whether you accept it or not, it's the last time they could be in a green jersey. You never know, injuries, form, anything that happens from here. So I remember Dennis Hickey talking before the 2007 match against Italy, and as I'd find out later that Dennis was planning to retire, he gave an unbelievable speech about taking opportunities, not taking them for granted, all these different things. And it was really bizarre, because it was like, where is this coming from? But I'm loving it wherever it's coming from. And everybody played really, really well that day, and we just kind of switched off a little bit, gave up a try towards the end of it. Brian had gone off injured as a little thing, and turned out we would have won the Six Nations had we been a tiny little bit more accurate. So it's a little bit, you know, it was two sides of both sides of that within 6 hours, where we actually went out, thought we had played a brilliant game, and then it turned out we actually weren't good enough. And we could have won the championship. It was a real cruel.
I remember that. Elvis hadn't left the building, because Elvis Vermeulen scored a late try for France, and that decided. And Ireland conceded two tries in that match in Rome late on.
Two tries, yeah.
And that was
the one that killed us.
Yeah,
the last exactly. one, which was yeah. just
because normally you hear Elvis has left the building. You know, if there's an issue in a stadium, Elvis hadn't left the building. He scored. He was the French number 8, Elvis Vermeulen, and he scored.
How long have you been thinking about that joke?
I was just thinking that the thing that distracted me before I actually jumped in there was when Dar said Chisholm. All I could think of was John Wayne. As opposed to Chisholm. So it was Chisholm. All I was thinking Chisholm. I wonder what film that was again, when it was John Wayne.
As this podcast goes on and on and on, you will get to realize how bad I am at names. But I think, to come back to the point, it is really important for these players to draw a line under that. It was a less than consummate performance against Wales. Coulda, shoulda, didn't win in England. And there will be a little bit of doubt creeping in there. It is really important, I think, for these players that they deliver independent of whoever they're playing this week.
Right. Before any more film jokes or
no jokes.
Or
that was
names.
A great film. Western. I think we should, just before we go, I think if we have time, I think we should also mention the 20s. I think it would be remiss of us to sit here and not mark the fact that they are also going for a championship. And while it was marginally less disappointing in the sense they didn't give up an unbeaten record against England, drew 32 all last time and can't win a third Grand Slam in a row. I think it's a sellout in Cork on Friday night. I think that's important to acknowledge the work that Richie Murphy has done. He's leaving to take over as interim head coach of Ulster. And I think that the fact that they should, against Scotland, run up a win. They won't know. They're a point behind in the standings, a point behind England. They're 17 points worse off in terms of the point differential. England are in Pau in France. France have picked a pretty strong side.
France have picked
the Do we need to send Dennis Hickey down for a little
I think a little chat. So. Yeah.
Take it, boys.
Even if you do it in Zoom, I think it'd work in the changing rooms. But I think it's to acknowledge what a great job that Richie Murphy has done. I'm not saying he's finished or he won't come back for the World Junior Championship in Cape Town during the summer. But I think...
Oh, yeah. Wish them all the best of luck. You know, we want to see another trophy.
Well, yeah. I think also the fact that everybody says, oh, well, it was potentially three Grand Slams in a row. But you look at it from that perspective, every group, there isn't a massive crossover in the group. So I think there were five from last year. So this in itself is an achievement for those. And it will be the pinnacle for some. They won't go on to have glittering professional rugby careers. That sounds really downbeat, doesn't it?
No.
Lovely downbeat note in the podcast. Oh, yeah, but it's the
biggest, but I hope they win. It's the biggest, yeah. It's their biggest moment in their young lives to date, and it's brilliant rugby as well. One of the great things about 20s rugby is you get this mishmash of skill levels, body developments, everything like that, and it really is genuinely engaging rugby. So if anybody can tune in, I do recommend you do.
Right then, we will leave it there. My thanks as always to Gordon and John. My name is Nathan Johns. You've been listening to the Counter Up podcast, brought to you by the Irish Times in association with Nifty Business. If you like listening to us, please do leave a rating and subscribe. We'll be back on Monday to talk through what happens at the Aviva on Saturday.